Talk Back with Gary Knoll, Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This entire hour will be devoted to looking at how we can live a longer and healthier life. I'm going to talk about the latest in the real science of healing. All of the information I will share originates from mainstream science's peer-reviewed journals. The question then is, if this is all from orthodox science, why aren't we being advocated to live this way by our Surgeon General, by the head of the U.S. Public Health Service that oversees all of the health agencies in the United States, the National Institutes of Aging? You would think that this was way out quackery material. It isn't, as you will see, but this is what will help lower blood pressure, overcome arthritis, prevent or reverse diabetes, help open up your arteries, reverse the aging of your brain. That's what I'm going to deal with. No guests today, no original in-depth investigative report, but throughout the entire show, I will take your calls. We have a toll-free 800 number in our studio in New York City, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and I will try to get as many of your calls in. Now, because I deal with so many topics, we are the leading number one original in-depth investigative reporting a program in the United States. We do more than any other radio show. In fact, we do more than the entire Pacifica Network combined. We do about 3 original investigations per month. So if you've heard something you'd like to address, please feel free to do so. We take on environmental issues as well and human nature. But today, it's just about healing. But any question you have is up to you to call in. Now, I'm going to share information from Michelle Flagg on reversing brain cell death by growing brand new mitochondria. Those are little energy factories in our body. And why, when we get older, when we do have healthy mitochondria, we, in effect, are reversing our aging process. From Daniel Becker on what we can do to help suppress that deadly surge in blood sugar right after a meal. Most people are not aware how bad it is. It's bad, and we'll show you how to reduce that. Also, this afternoon, I had an opportunity to speak with lots of people in our auditorium over on the east side of Manhattan who were in just the end of week one of a 4-week special lifestyle modification program on dealing with arthritis. But ours is not a medical approach. It is a nutritional and lifestyle modification approach. After just 1 week, we had them talking about less stiffness, no pain, more mobility, feeling much better. All these great thoughts, and that's just after the first week, and we have 3 more weeks to go. We filmed them, each and every person, talking about what they had, how long they had had it, what meds they were on or not. At the end of 4 weeks, I'll film them again so you can see for yourself when I do a split screen for each person that completes the protocol what improvements they've had. Then I will post the protocol so you can use them yourself. Now, one of the things I have not yet given them, that'll be next week. Today was week 2. It'll be in week 3, is cryo oil. But I'm going to give you a heads up for everyone who has arthritis and you want to know about something that can really help you, that will turn off inflammation, that works synergistically. It is Cryol, K-R-I-L-L. And there's a special article by Jason Ramirez from Life Extension. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. I hope that you're eating a lot of garlic. Now, for a lot of people, just aesthetically, the best way of eating garlic for them is a lightly sauteed, not till it's black, and just till it's golden or translucent. And you can put it into your brown rice or beans or a soup or a baked potato, any way you like it. But that garlic is important. Why? Because it's been shown that the more garlic you have, the less blood cancers you're likely to get. Now, this is from the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention. And I also believe that we should be using grapeseed extract. And there's a couple ways of getting this. One, you can take grapes and juice them. I remember a long time ago, it was the very beginning of my career, and I owned a little tiny health food store. I mean a tiny one. It's still there, Creative Health Food, up on 108th and Broadway. And that's all I could afford. I had no employees. It was kind of fun because in the morning when I get there, I would have made soups and brown rice and different dishes. That night before, the bus would stop at 86th and Broadway and take me up to 108th, and I'd carry this stuff across the street, open up my little store, and then the garbage people would come, and the garbage drivers. And they would come in and they'd have breakfast, at least those who were interested in health. Well, I didn't give them bacon and eggs. I gave them hot cereals and protein shakes. And then for lunch, I would give people, you know, these nice homemade sandwiches. And for dinner, I would give them whatever I made, and soups and salads. And in between, I'd run downstairs in this little tiny cramped basement, and I'd package up sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds and brown rice. We didn't have a lot of variety at that time. And then I'd bring them back upstairs, and I'd sell them. I remember it took me a year before I had my first $75 day, total gross business. Could you imagine having a store on Broadway, around Columbia University, a very popular area, where it took over a year, and you hadn't even done $75 in business in a day? I remember I felt very good about that. Couldn't afford any employees. And I remember at the time there was this actor who was struggling, coming across the street, and he would come in and eat all the time. His name was Hector Elizondo. I'm sure many of you, he played in a lot of famous films and television series. Now, later share a floor with another actor who became later popular at the time, struggling, and looked forward to coming up and getting some free food, Peter Boyle. It's fun to look back on who was struggling but trying to master their careers, and later would, and become very well-known, who would eat in this place. And there was a lot of joy. In fact, I opened up the first gourmet vegan restaurant in the United States, the Fertworth at 107th and Broadway, one half block down from the store, and it was mobbed. Everybody who was in the counterculture movement or the anti-war movement would show up and have dinner there. You get a whole meal for $2.25. It just brought back some memories. But there was a little book that this man brought me one day, a little tiny book. Looked like a dime book, and it was called The Grape Cure. Now, in The Grape Cure, it talks about how this woman had a diagnosis of a terminal cancer, and nothing was working, and she tried the orthodox approach, and it didn't work. And so, at that time, we didn't have all these alternative cancer clinics. We didn't have the Dr. Rivese's and Dr. Issel's and Burton in the Bahamas, and Virginia Livingston Wheeler in California, and Brzezinski in Houston, El Cotti in Panama. We didn't have them. We didn't have any place where you could really go. The closest we would have, and that would be a couple years later, would be Ann Wigmore, who did a lot of good, by the way. In any case, it talked about how she would juice dark grapes, because she was told by someone to do this. And she just kept doing it. And in time, she got better and better, and then supposedly overcame her cancer. And I thought about it at that time. Is that possible? Well, now we know that in grapes you have resveratrol, you have in the grape seed, you have proanthocyanidins, in the grape skin, you have polyphenols. You are loading this up with antioxidants, but specific dark color nutrients, phytonutrients. And we do know that there's anti-cancer properties. It's just that you're not going to have an anti-cancer effect at moderate amounts. You have to take a lot of it. Here's the latest study, and again, this is from a peer-reviewed journal. They researched 66,000 men and women enrolled in a lifestyle study. And here's what it says, quote, article published in the journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention reveals a link between increased use of garlic or grapeseed supplements and lower risk of malignancies, including Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and leukemia. And that's good. There was a 45% lower adjusted risk of cancer compared to those who didn't use it. So, now what if you ate both together? What if you had garlic in your dishes or in your juice, and then grape seed, and you had grape seed extract supplements with actual juicing of your grapes? Because when you juice the grapes or blend them up in a Vitamix, you're breaking open the skin and you're breaking open the seed, and therefore releasing the nutrients that are contained therein. Those two together would be terrific. So something to help you use to prevent cancer, or if you have it, to help you. A lot of men are having problem with cognition. More than ever before in my career, I'm counseling people daily who are having memory problems. And it's sad, because when you know someone and you see them asking you the same question over and over again, and you're answering them, and then maybe 2 minutes later, they have forgotten they asked you this question, and they ask it again. And then, just the other day, I had someone come in our office here, and I counseled them for an hour. They came downstairs, and then I came down, and they were sitting there, and I said, are you doing all right? The person says, yeah, I'm here to see you. And I said, I just saw you. We just spent an hour together. And he said, we did? I said, yes, we just spent a whole hour together. He said, wow. He said, I don't remember. That's why it's so important that you have a caregiver attend sessions when you are suffering from cognitive decline. Now, at what age does your brain begin to suffer the advances of diminishment? 27. Let me repeat that. We can now confirm that your aging of the brain actually occurs and starts to accelerate at age 27. What about something that we don't pay attention to? If you go back and if you study history as I do, and you look at people from Greece and from the Roman Empire, even the founding fathers, they were living into their 80s and 90s and were extremely literate, had great memories, and suffered very little of the diseases we know today. I mean, look at John Adams. You're looking at a long-lived president, and Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin. These people lived into their late 80s or 90s, and they were vitalist. Now, vitalist is connected with vitalism. Spinoza, Eurydicles, Sophocles, Plato, Maimonides, Gandhi, Voltaire, Jefferson. These were vitalists. Now, what does that mean? It means they believed in surrounding yourself with people and thoughts and environments that inspire a higher vibrational level, hence vitalism. And I wondered, is there any truth to this? Is it just some abstract philosophy? Is it just one of these kind of quaint notions of history? So first I studied the actual age. I got the actual age of every signer of the Declaration of Independence. And you know they're living about 10 years longer, but in much more vital health than the members of our Congress over the last 20 years. Comparing them for the length of time they were in office and their age. So we've done a whole lot wrong. Well, that gets back to cognitive decline. Today we're faced with greater pollutants going into our body. We have more refined carbohydrates, more simple sugars, more processed food, the zombie bread, which is toast, and bagels. We're consuming far more alcohol. And it was not common to binge drink when you were in college back at that time. People didn't have the cigarettes that time. They had pipe tobacco. They didn't have the synthetic pesticides. A bottle of water, a plastic bottle of water, will leach out the plastic polymers into the water, and that becomes a part of your biochemistry, can alter your DNA. We have heavy metals. We have mercury that represents 52% of the total weight of a silver filling. So it's not really a silver filling, it's a mercury filling, and every time you chew, the mercury is released as vapors and goes into the brain, and that is a strong neurotoxin. They didn't have vaccines then. Today, if you get a flu shot or an H1N shot, you just got yourself 50 micrograms of methyl or ethyl mercury, thimerosal, which is extremely damaging. In fact, to show you how damaging it is, they said, oh, there's no danger. These are small quantities of mercury. Okay, well, we took a look at all the toxicological data, and we found that there were dozens of studies showing how dangerous this mercury is. One drop, one single drop, one part per billion of mercury from a vaccine was enough to immediately attack a neuron and destroy it. Now, how much is one part per billion? Imagine an Olympic swimming pool, a municipal pool. You stand at the side of the pool, and with an eyedropper, you put one single drop of methylmercury in the pool. One drop in an Olympic swimming pool, you've contaminated the whole pool. That's one part per billion. That's how dangerous it is. But to prove this, we actually filmed this, and it's in one of my films, Vaccine Nation, showing what happens to a brain cell neuron. Now imagine that you have not a part per billion, but you have a thousand times more potent. You don't have a milligram, you have micrograms. And so every year you keep putting that flu shot in your body, which has never been shown to prevent the flu, by the way. I have 12 articles, all scientifically referenced, all done by myself and our in-residence scholars here in our office. And we have scholars in residence here. We have PhDs from Albert Einstein School of Medicine. We have graduates from Harvard and all the other schools who work here. And what they do is they, with their scholarship and their objectivity, they review all the material to see, is it accurate, is it objective? So when you're told that you need a vaccine, that it's safe and effective, we simply put it to the test. Are they telling the truth? And they have not been telling the truth, especially with Gardasil. Nobody should be getting Gardasil. You should never allow your kid to get Gardasil. Read the newest article on GaryNull.com or PRN.com. Read our article that was just put up there on Gardasil. And it'll tell you what the publicist for Gardasil won't. It'll tell you the truth. In any case, so I decided to put this whole thing to the test. So at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a research fellow in anti-aging medicine for 30 years, and all I did was study what will help you live a longer life, what will keep your skin healthier, hair, your immune system, your cells, and most importantly, your brain. I found that we could classify foods into two foods. those foods that were vital and those foods that were devitalized. And the devitalized foods were always the heavily prepared foods. For example, anything that was a whole grain, like brown rice or rye or steel-cut oatmeal or barley or quinoa or amaranth, or a walnut, almond, pistachios, cashews, filbert, hazelnut, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, poppy seeds, chia seeds, living foods such as sprouts and greens, microgreens in particular, the small greens. The juices made from those carried an enormous wallop. In fact, that's why I've used them ever since, as the principal part of the recommended dietary therapies, the juicing. In fact, I did every kind of test. I would take a grape, and I would measure the vital life energy. I had some equipment that was on loan from Drexel University through a Dr. Douglas Dean, and he in turn let me use it, and I could measure the energy force, and on a scale of 0, meaning no energy, to 10, juices were consistently a 10, providing they were fresh made. If a juice had been purchased in a store, even a health food store, that was bottled and had been pasteurized or filtered, which most were, because if you saw a real glass of juice, if you make a glass of juice, you have all these little tiny particles floating around in it. Okay, well, if you filter that out, that's processing. If you then pasteurize it, you've destroyed the capacity of it to go bad quickly, but you've also destroyed the antioxidants, which is an important part of it. So I measured a grape, about a 9, juiced the grape into grape juice, that was a 10, and then pasteurized that grape juice, and then it went down to about a 5. That didn't mean that it wasn't still healthy, it meant it wasn't as healthy. And then when the same thing, if you took a nut like a walnut, that was an 8. If you made it into a walnut butter, it was between an 8 and a 9. But if you roasted it and salted it, or roasted it and didn't salt it, it went down to around a 5. But where it really got interesting was in the grains. If you took a whole grain like a wheat berry, that was a 7, and then you sprouted it into wheat grass, it went to a 9, made it into a wheat grass juice, it was a 10. Then if you processed it, instead of taking it into the wheat grass and then juicing it, instead you took it into, let's say, a flour. And to make it into a flour, you have to crush it, and you have to remove the endosperm and the oil, or it'll go rancid. And then you have to put preservatives in there to keep it from going rancid. And then you have it went from what would have been a 10 as a wheatgrass juice, or a 9 as a wheatgrass, or a 7 as a wheat berry. Now, when the moment you process it, it went down to about a 4. But then let's say you made it into a bread. Now, if it was a whole grain bread, it was at about a 3 to 4. But when you toasted it, it went down to 0. And this is true of almost all the grains. So the more you process the grains, A, they spiked your glycemic index, B, they were not healthy for you, and C, they lacked vitalism. So then I was able, over a period of a year of testing all this, and I did every kind of combination, like an apple, which is terrific for you. And then I would skin the apple. Where I come from in the South, a lot of people, unfortunately, peel off the apple. I don't know why they do it. Maybe it's just custom. They see other people taking a little knife and peeling off the skin. It's that skin of the apple that has the energy in it. Without the skin of the apple, you're down to around a 6. With it, you're up to an 8. And when you juice the apple fresh, and you have fresh apple juice, fresh made out of your blender or juice extractor, it's a 10. And when you dry the apple, it's a dried apple, as long as you're not using heat above 115 degrees, it stays. That was really neat also. Pears, peaches, papaya, mangoes, tomatoes, beans, beets, kale. When you dried all these fruits and vegetables without heat in a dehydrator, it stayed almost identical to the energy it had before. Maybe a half a point under, but still vital. That's why dried fruits like figs and dates and raisins and prunes are very good for you, providing you don't overdo it. And the same is also true for dried vegetables. Well, remember, there was a time in the United States where the pioneers and earlier people did not have preservatives except by salting things, so they would dry them. And they would dry them and keep them in kegs, and then they would use them when they needed them by just hydrating them, throwing some stuff into a pot and adding water and boiling it, and they made all these stews. Stews were a big thing in early Americana. So anyhow, I was able to distinguish the difference between how a food is processed and how vital it is. Even if it contains the same nutrients, if you have a glass of grape juice that has the same identical amount of sugar or vitamin C, one is pasteurized, one is not, the missing ingredient that science wasn't testing, nobody was testing, USDA didn't test it, they had no measurement for it, was, is it vital? And the missing link, I believe, that the people in Greece and Egypt and Mesopotamia and the Romans and our founding fathers had, was vitalism. They consumed that which was vital, that had a high vibration. And by the way, you can say, well, all right, I was able to prove it scientifically. In fact, thank goodness I filmed and photographed all this. And I have it on a section of my website under photographs. And if you look, you'll see a lot of the scientists and myself there in the lab. But you'll see one woman, and she has, I think, on a plaid jacket. And she has short salt and pepper hair, and she looks like she's praying. That's not praying. That was Dr. Dolores Krieger, head of nursing at New York University, who was using her vitalism energy to change the biochemistry of a rat that had ascites tumor that would die in about 22 days, and she was able to do that 6 out of 6 times, as was Rabbi from Brooklyn. We had a chiropractor, and in fact, of all the chiropractors, Dr. Morton Jacobs, Rabbi Abraham Wiseman was the rabbi. He was known as the chiropractor with the healing hands. No other chiropractor was called the healing hand, but he was famous for that. That's why I invited him in. Dr. Thomas Kruth, the Seminary of St. Luke. We had a physician from Columbia University, Olga Worrell, the great spiritual healer, Catherine Coleman. We had all these people involved in the experiment, but 6 out of 6 were able to repeatedly, no matter what we gave them, heal them. Then we tried something really neat. Okay, now I was able to, for the first time ever, scientifically, at least that I'm aware of, prove that an energy could go from a human being into an animal and make a difference in that animal's pathogenesis, the pathology of disease. And because we did it 6 out of 6 times, then it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't, just one of those things. No, there was no one thing. We maintain all the standards of good science. But then I'm thinking, okay, so now we've proven it. And by the way, from that study that you will see in that picture, she founded the entire field of therapeutic touch. So when you go into a hospital or you go into a doctor's office and there's a nurse, that nurse has had a course in therapeutic touch, therapeutic healing. It's common. It's in the curriculum of every nursing school, and it all started at the Institute of Applied Biology in that study. So anyhow, then I started thinking, okay, now if this is true that these people were able to impart an energy from their body into the animals, isn't it also true that the food we're eating should be more than protein, fats, carbohydrates, vitamins, enzymes, mineral, and fiber? It should also contain energy. So I divided the foods into two groups. And because I was also affiliated with Trafalgar Hospital, I headed the addiction control. I had thousands and thousands of people I counseled using a holistic model for helping them, where the Institute was interested in patenting drugs that they could make a lot of money off of that would get people off drugs, as they were with chemotherapy, I was trying the natural approach. And I was able to help a lot of people by detoxifying them using intravenous vitamin drips and high levels of niacin, high levels of B complex. So I had a group of people who had very advanced disease, and I asked the, and I was also a registered dietitian, and I asked the director of the hospital, would you try this experiment? You have them on your standard hospital food. Try this. Give them these foods. Now, these contain the same identical quantities of protein, fat, carbohydrates, and calories that your hospital food does, but they're divided into two groups, 5 and above and 5 and below. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, 0 to 5 are the foods that are the commonly consumed foods in America. These would be your processed foods. Meat is 0 on a vibrational level. 0. Chicken, 0. I said, so all the foods you commonly give to give a person their protein or their carbohydrate or fats are highly processed, denatured, and even though they have nutrients, which is all that orthodox linear Newtonian science looks at, I'm saying there's a missing link. And he said, well, that's just crazy. There is no missing link. And I said, yes, there is. And we had this big argument at this Monday morning when all the different heads of the different research department, virology and bacteriology and oncology, were all sitting there. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. Rather than argue, why don't you just set aside some people to try both groups and see, do they get better or they do not? Because the foods that you're giving them, the foods that any dietitian would give them based upon the doctor's order, are, I believe, what's causing them not to get better. Now, in 1 year, 53,000 patients died from malnutrition they got inside a hospital eating hospital food. Yet there wasn't a single article anywhere about this. I had to find this information in the dietetics research journals. And yet you would think that if dietitians were killing 56,000 patients by causing malnutrition deaths, that someone would decide maybe they had it wrong and would change it. Not at all. That's not the way we work in America. We never care about results. We only care about the illusion that we know what we're doing because we're the authority figures. Well, anyhow, finally, after about 3 months, I was told, quietly, go ahead and do it. So what I did was, I gave the doctor's diet. Why was it called the doctor's diet? Because I went down to New York University Hospital and Bellevue and up to Columbia, and I asked the doctors, is this a good diet? And I only selected foods 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they all said yes. And that's what I suggested. And I asked them, monitor them and see what happens. Then I gave the 5 to 10 and without absolutely any challenge at all, the group of people who received the food, identical amounts of proteins. In other words, when I gave a 10 food and a 0 food, they both contained the same amount of nutrients. But it was the energy that was different. Living energy versus denatured energy. Vitalism versus devitalism. And one of the people who happened to have been in the hospital with a life-challenging illness at the time was my editor from one of my publishing companies. And she was a wonderful human being. And I remember going in before this started, and she'd be coming in and out of coma. She was in pain. She was on morphine. Well, 3 months after this protocol started, she was up and had gotten so good and so healthy, she was able to return home. And it was interesting because at some point one of the chief doctors came to me and the director and said, it's no longer a question, is this making a difference? We see it's making a difference. But then there was this meeting and he said the following, we're not going to publish the results of this. And I said, why not? This could save millions of lives. He said, do you realize how much power the Dietetics Association and the dietitians have, and the special food vendors, the meat lobby, the dairy lobby, the sugar lobby, the refined confectionery lobby, the artificial sweetener lobby, the COLA lobby, you're going to go up against all those people. We can't afford that controversy, and we can't afford that fight. So our suggestion is just encourage people to eat this kind of food, but don't make it an issue because we won't support it. And by the way, that happened on 113 separate occasions over my 30 years where my research proved what Orthodox medicine had not been able to do and did, but because it was challenging and they were getting mainstream medicine money and research grants, they never published it. In any case, it was the basis for how I created my dietary program, the very one that was helping people today with arthritis after 1 week, the very one that helped Marie McGovern, who you all heard on the air here, make such improvement as she is making improvement with Alzheimer's or with others, with thousands of them. You can go up on my website and hear these people tell their own stories. The one thing all the people that I work with have in common is vitalism. Now, then the idea was, okay, if now we've proven that foods have vital energy, we've proven that people have vital energy, and some people master how they can share this energy. And I thought, well, gee whiz, every single mother masters the art of sharing an energy with their newborn baby. They sing them lullabies. They kiss them. They bond with them. That's vitalism. That's energy. Everyone that loves another human being unconditionally and embraces that person without any fear or limitation or hesitation, that's vitalism. That creates that healing energy. Now, a brand new study came out this week, a major study showing that our grandmom's cookies actually taste better. And that nurse's tenderness and that nurse's care and compassion, that makes a difference in our healing. Why? Because we've always thought the placebo effect was inert. There was nothing behind a placebo. It was an inert sugar pill. Not true. Your belief in something making a difference makes a difference. If you believe that the doctor is trying to help you, that belief in the doctor will make a difference in helping you. So just imagine all the ways that we inspire people. Positive thoughts, that's vitalism. Negative thoughts, that devitalizes. Do you feel happy and strong when you're around an angry, depressed person? No. You feel drained, don't you? Everyone in this audience, be honest, when you're around negative, toxic people, do you feel energized or do you feel drained? Then you explain to me, those who are cynics, explain to me how it is that you went from having energy to feeling drained being around a negative, toxic person or working in a negative, toxic environment, devitalizing. So imagine then those who inspire us through poetry or dance or verse or sculpturing and writing, whatever it may be. We are inspired by their vitalism. And artists are uniquely capable of vitalism. That's why almost every movement in history that has led to us being emancipated and transcending our limitations is always motivated by an artist giving us something that inspires us. Our songs, artists. Our images, artists. So you see, vitalism works in a lot of different ways. And it can work to enhance us if it's positive, and to diminish us if it's negative. It liberates us or it enslaves us, depending upon if it's vitalism or devitalizing. In any case, I was able to show this, and then I took him into a room, and I wanted one more experiment. Actually, two more experiments. One experiment is I took a group of sprout seeds, and I put the same sprout seeds in two rooms and two parts of a building. Identical seeds, identical soil, identical water, and identical light. But in one, each of these people who had proven they could heal cancer in these mice came in, and they meditated or prayed over the sprouts, and I did time-lapse photography. The group of sprouts that were given the direct energy grew twice as fast. And it was amazing to see this. Ah, now this would take 30 years before Bruce Lipton would tell us what was going on. This great molecular biologist, Stanford University, and one of the fathers of molecular biology in this country, found that when he took the DNA or the gene out of a cell, it still continued to function for a period of time. And that would be like taking an engine out of a car and the car still runs, or taking your brain out of your skull and you could still think. How's that possible? Go against all the laws that we know. The trouble is the laws we know are limited laws. They don't take into account other possibilities. And he then termed the notion that this is epigenetic, meaning the energy of the surrounding area and the other cells were allowing this cell to continue to function. Well, then doesn't that mean by extension that a mother's developing fetus, if the mother and father are giving positive energy, thoughts, joy, song, massage, you're giving a vibration, and the energy and the vibration carries the message that you are loved and appreciated and wanted. Imagine now what that will tell us about the psychoneuroimmunology of that child as it develops, knowing that it was wanted in the world versus the child that is not wanted. And think of the helplessness of that fetus and the vibration that goes in. These are concepts I'm asking people to think about, not because I say that you should be something or nothing on this. It's just I'm always curious about the power of energy and what energy does. Now imagine when something's wrong. How many times has this happened to you? What's wrong? Nothing. No, I know something's wrong. What's wrong? Nothing. But you know something's wrong. How do you know something's wrong? You felt a change in the vibration of the energy. And then finally someone goes, well, this is wrong. And then they explain it. But you felt it before you knew it. We are all connected by energy. It inspires us. And when we are in the best place, at the highest ends, we harmonize. So for ultimate health, we have to harmonize our energy, meaning we have to only take in those foods and beverages that harmonize with ourselves, that honor ourselves. Instead of the person that goes out and drinks a scotch and just killed a million of their cells. Isn't it amazing the magnificence of life? When someone asked me once in one of my classes, do you believe in a power beyond the cell? And I said, of course. And he said, well, as a scientist, how can you? I said, it's simple. About every 8 seconds, your eyes are going to blink. There'll be 500 biochemical processes happening in your liver every second. You have between 60 to 100 trillion cells that are working in perfect harmony. If you eat something and you think it's good, the body will sense that there's a bacteria or parasite and cause diarrhea. And that starts from the time it's in your mouth, not just your stomach. How did it know? How does your heart know to beat a certain rate when you're sitting and a different rate when you're running, but come right back to the rate that it should be when you stop running? And when you stand, it beats at a different rate than when you're sitting. And when you're laying down, it beats at a different rate. How does it know to speed up your pulse rate and then bring it back? To digest foods, your body's going to digest brown rice differently than tofu. It'll digest chicken differently than string beans. How does it know when it's digested enough? Otherwise, the hydrochloric acid could theoretically just eat a hole right in your stomach. If any scientist in the world can explain to me, any scientist in the world, explain to me, as a scientist that I am, explain to me how the body knows to stop secreting hydrochloric acid and not eat a hole in itself. That cannot be explained by science. There is no scientific explanation. You can make foolish, stupid guesses, but that's all it is a foolish, stupid guess, because the body has an innate intelligence and we are incapable of even understanding it. Because our science, which is based upon rational reduction, does not even understand energy. Well, Jack, let me tell you something, and even for the dimmest bulb on the block, you got to get this. What is the only thing missing when you're dead? Energy. How do we know you're alive? Energy. So life begins when energy is present, and life changes when energy is absent. But isn't there a basic rule that you cannot create nor destroy energy? That is correct. Well, if you can't create or destroy energy, where'd it go? And since your eyes are blinking, your liver's digesting, and your body's controlling your temperature, if it's 100 degrees outside or zero, you're still at the same degree, how's it know to do that? Where is this thermostat in our body? There is no thermostat. It's never been found. But it does this, doesn't it? then that means that before life occurred, the energy that would cause all life to live in perfect harmony for as long as we allowed it, understand what I just said, as long as we allowed it, it would honor us completely. That meant that the knowledge of what to do at the biochemical level had to be present, because a baby's brain is smooth. It does not have an immune system. The only immunity a body that young has is what the mother imparts through her breast milk and her kisses. A simple kiss is a way of exchanging the mucus from a baby's mouth to a mother's mouth. The mother then creates the antibodies that go through the breast milk, and the baby then is being naturally immunized. Gee whiz, and that immunization lasts for life. So, then beyond the cell, beyond the nuclei, beyond the atom, beyond all that we have measured, there is something we have refused to acknowledge and do not study. It is not on any medical curriculum, and that is the life energy. It scares us. We become masters of the cell and completely ignorant of the energy of the cell. So that's where I spent my entire adult life, studying the energy of life. And that's why I've written what I have and done the research and why I'm doing it now in this new study. So people were all surprised today, and they were saying, gee whiz, Gary, how's it possible that in, you know, 1 week I've had stiff joints for 21 years, pain. One woman said she'd been on 9 medications for pain, Celebrex and Vioxx and all these others. In 1 week, that pain is almost gone, because now she's experiencing only foods and beverages that are 9 or 10, and nothing that she was used to that would cause the pain. And we can now associate inflammation, which destroys cells and changes the message. We can buy the diet, French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, colas, the things we love and the things we become used to are all devitalizing. Politicians, devitalizing. Most of the laws we live by that they create, devitalizing. Most of the limitations, the bureaucracies that we honor, devitalizing. The loss of our freedoms that inspire us to become vitalist. You show me the patriots and I'll show you vitalism. And it scares us. We'd rather have a nation of non-vital people because they're easy to control. Thank goodness we have some vitalists out there. And I commend you for challenging the corruption of devitalized thought, the devitalization of education, the devitalization of body politic, and our medical institutions. What we need is vitalism on all levels. And when you're around vitalism, you'll know it, you'll feel it. It is unmistakable. And that's what one time we had. That's what we've lost through a highly commercialized process, commodified, pasteurized, homogenized, blandercide life, where people pride themselves on never again looking inward, always outward. And then we wonder why we have so much disease. And then the high queen of junk food southern cooking has diabetes, hides it, becomes a great paid sponsor for a drug when lifestyle and vitalism would have done a whole lot better. I'm Gary Knoll. Those are some thoughts. Now I'm going to take a break, come back, and take your call. Sorry I didn't get these other things, but when I get off on a roll, I just let it roll. Stay with us, please, and give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Doobie Brothers. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to John from Pennsylvania. Hi, John.
Hey, Gary. Thanks so much for everything you do. I had a question about cortisol.
Yeah.
If my mom took a cortisol, a saliva test, morning, noon, evening, and night, and all four levels are way elevated.
Mm-hmm.
Could you recommend some things to do to lower that? And also,
sure.
I remember a few months ago you mentioned that if you have all the lab work done, we could send it to you, and then you would recommend some
sure.
protocols.
Happy to help you, your mom, John. First, understand that cortisol is but one of the stress hormones. We have epinephrine, norepinephrine, adrenaline, catecholamines, and each of these plays a vitalist position when it comes to protecting us. The flight or fight response is directly elevated when we need it, but then it shouldn't stay elevated. It's when it stays elevated. Now, what can cause it to cause this elevation? When we're overweight, when we're on a protein diet, which is one of the most devastating things Americans have ever done, is go on these high protein diets. The high protein diet will stimulate the cortisol. When we have problems with our thyroid, and when we also are exhausted, so we have an adrenal exhaustion, and with adrenaline's exhausted, we almost always have fluctuations in blood sugar, and when you start rising your blood sugar, cortisol generally goes behind that. So I suggest the following. First, get your mom into the hands of a licensed classical physician homeopath, because one of the best ways of bringing down cortisol is homeopathically. Then get your mom to do some de-stressing and to start exercising as best she can, so that the more fat she burns, the more imbalanced becomes her hormone levels. That's the easiest way of approaching it. And juicing is also very crucial. And two of the juices I would definitely recommend would be grapefruit, the whole grapefruit, the skin, the peel, and lemons, the same. And then blend that with some vitamin C, cayenne pepper, and curcumin. And always take cayenne pepper with curcumin, because when you take that pepper with curcumin, you enhance its usableness many times over. It's a real catalyst. Okay? All the best to you. Let's say hello to Al from Long Island. Hi, Al. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. My question concerns a physical condition of the New York Pacifica station, WBAI, over which you have broadcast for many years. As you know, almost all the station's revenues are derived from subscriptions and contributions of listeners, and it only costs $25 a year for a subscription. More than 120 days per year are devoted to round-the-clock fund drives, which offer excellent premiums. BII is located in the middle of the FM band and can't be missed by listeners. Its 50,000-watt transmitter broadcasts to more than 10 million adults throughout the New York metropolitan area. In addition, its programs can be accessed worldwide through its website. BAI is the only high-powered station in this region that can broadcast news and talk programs free of corporate control. Given these facts, you would expect the station to have hundreds of thousands of annual subscribers. However, this is not the case. Since 2004, BAI has been able to attract less than 20,000 paid subscribers on an annual basis. As a result, the station has been in a chronic fiscal crisis, in danger of going off the air because it can't pay all of its debts and bills. As a BAI veteran, Gary, what do you think are the reasons for this state of affairs?
Okay, Al, thank you. I believe, in fact, just before today's show, Myron, our social media director, and I were having a conversation. And it's not just BAI, it's all Pacifica and any other of the non-commercial stations that doesn't take an honest look at what people want. It honors its core audience, average age 67, and its ideology. But when you're that strict with your ideology and you're doing a good job of that ideology, you're also excluding everyone else that doesn't align with it. I believe that, and I've told this to the head of Pacifica, Summer Reese, the head of the national board, Arlene Engelhart, the head of the stations that would entertain an idea, that if you want to have more funding and hence less fund drives, then you have to stop everything and take an honest look at programming and ask yourself, does this programming represent the needs of individuals, especially younger people? Younger people are the largest single group of people looking for information in the worldwide media, and they're looking for it over the Internet because the Internet is not packaged programming with that they frequently do not like. They're very smart. Younger people are very intelligent, realize that what you're going to get on CNN and ABC and Fox and MSNBC is it's aligned to the corporatist mindset. It doesn't matter whether you're on the left or right. It's corporatist. Now, and NPR is corporatist, and PBS is corporatist, and I've had 28 different specials on PBS programs, on stations. What you need, if you want to succeed today, you need to stop the ideology and simply ask, who am I trying to reach? What is the quality of the message I'm going to share? Who are the best people to share this message? And that's where you should put your energy. To do that means you have to say goodbye to some messages. You have to refocus your ideology. And if you're willing to do that, there is a future. If you're not, then there is no future. It's that simple. And I believe everyone will appreciate the great and noble messages that it was only Pacifica stations for about 30 years that were able to share with us. Some of the finest programmers, and Rick Harris, and when I think back of Lex Hickson, and the people I've known. I've been on Pacifica for 34 years without ever missing a single week. That makes it the longest-running, uninterrupted Pacifica program and non-commercial radio program in American history. So it's something I speak, and I've never received a salary, I've never received a penny, so I speak with some authority on this. I encourage constantly re-examining your program grid. Re-examine who you want to listen to you. Because what you create is who you will involve and who you will bring to your airwaves. We are not in the 1960s. We're a fast-paced world with lots of young people with lots of different views, and they want to hear programming that's important to them. Where are the holistic, humanistic, libertarian programs? Where are the real green programs? Where are the programs that support the independent thinkers in a constructive, positive way? I find that when people are too focused upon saying no or being anti-something and not enough energy focused upon yes and what we can do in a positive way, then you start to get people who are also nihilist or negative or people who are apathetic and angry. And if you want to destroy an audience, keep it in one direction. If you want to build an audience, share things that they can change their lives in a positive way and reassess the value and beauty of life. That's what determines whether a station or a whole network rises or falls. Today, we don't have just BAI in New York or KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA in Berkeley, KPFT in Houston, or PFW in Washington. We have thousands of other outlets, thousands. So when you no longer are a monopoly and when you have to compete in the real world, then with people who are looking to fill a void, you have to change your whole mindset. I hope that the people in management understand that. Otherwise, in another 2 years to 3 years, the average age of a person listening to BAI will be 70. And then you will have a station on life support. And that's not what we want to see. Let us all encourage a more dynamic, open, and progressive mindset. And by the way, be very clear on this. Being democratic and liberal does not mean that you are progressive. Progressives do not align with an ideology, and especially anything that's rigid. They're fiercely independent. They seek solutions to problems and are willing to compromise just to go along to get along. They want to see transformation so that the public's interest is put first and foremost, and not the egos or the financial alignment with special interests. And that's all the Democrats and Republicans, this official parties, have been, and the media that supports them for a long time. So we have to be progressive, we have to be independent, we have to be thinking out of the box. Thank you very much for your call. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Now coming up on the Progressive Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the world. Just today I saw there were over 360 million hits when you typed in progressive and radio. And just a few years ago that had been zero. That takes a lot into account, but number one on that list is Progressive Radio Network, and Mike Rupert is right up in there. In fact, his name is mentioned when you Google Progressive Radio. There's Michael Rupert's name right at the top of that list. Nice to have you with us, Michael. What are you going to talk about today?
Gary, it's been an amazing weekend with the United States in retreat on all fronts. We have a very credible report tonight from Digital Journal that the United States government has reached out through the Swiss embassy, or through the Swiss ambassador, who's the channel, and acknowledged Iran's right to a nuclear program. Other stories are confirming military pullbacks, but there's a big power shift underway, and we're going to look at that tonight, along with a lot of other things. But here's a tease for you. If you thought fracking was bad, wait till you hear about super fracking. That's where we're going tonight.
Super fracking, that's a club on the Lower East Side.
Yeah. Super frack, super frack. I remember the song. I used to dance to it.
All right, Michael Rupert coming right at you. Please stay with us.